Long before the internet, the United States had a network connecting every home in every hamlet. It's called the Postal Service. It has a richer history of innovation and technology than many people realize. The first new history of USPS in 50 years has just been published. Neither Rain Nor Snow author Devin Leonard joins me now. Mr. Leonard, great to have you on.
Hey, Tom.
Tell us what prompted you to write a book about the Postal Service, which everyone else seems to be criticizing a lot these days, especially Congress.
Well, I was assigned to do a story about it, and it was the cover story of Bloomberg Businessweek magazine, where I'm a staff writer, in 2011. And I found out that the U.S. Postal Service delivers, more than 40% of the world's mail, and at the same time, it's going broke. So the piece got a lot of attention, and that raised a lot of questions, in my mind. And among other things, what I found out was that people malign the Postal Service now, but for years and years, Americans were sort of amazed and looked at the Postal Service with wonder. So, that's really what prompted me to do the book.
And in some ways, the wonder that people felt, the cause of the wonder, really is still there, because they have so many more addresses that they reach every single day without fail than there were 100 years ago or 10 years ago.
Well, that's the issue, Tom, is that every year there's a million more addresses, and at the same time, the mail's disappearing. In the last decade, the volume's gone down by 30%. So what that means is that it costs more and more and more to deliver a letter, because letter carriers are going to every house with fewer things in their mailbag.
So if you look at the classic first-class letter, then they're in a sort of death spiral, because the more expensive it gets per piece, the more they have to charge, and the more they charge, maybe the less people would be likely to mail a letter.
The one caveat I have there is that the U.S. Postal Service is also the world's cheapest mail delivery service, and actually they just lowered their rates by 2 cents. It used to be cheaper to send a letter in Spain than in the U.S., but no longer. But if you go to Denmark, it's about $1.50, and even in England, it's about 80 cents. So I would think that you probably could raise prices a little bit, and that would take care of a lot of problems. But then that raises all sorts of legislative issues.
Well, they have a postal rate commission, so they can't just arbitrarily do anything with the rates. It was the commission that took away that 2 cents, I think, right?
Yeah, it is, and they have a little bit of leeway. They're allowed to raise rates within the consumer price index, or the inflation rate, but given how quickly the mail is disappearing, and also the amount of their fixed costs, which keep going up, I guess that really doesn't help them that much. Just being able to being sort of harnessed to the inflation rate.
In your research, what do you make of the fact that Congress tried to reorganize the Postal Service a number of years ago? If anything, it's sort of like Amtrak. They say it's not a federal agency, but yet everything it does has to be approved by Congress. Was that a mistake? Should that be revisited, that whole structure?
I don't think it should be revisited per se, but I do think it sort of raises it. There's a lot of interesting things, when you look at the past and the present. And for years and years, the Postal Service was a patronage mill, and of course, people today think that that's terrible. But and also, the Postmaster General sat in the president's cabinet, and he was very often the president's campaign manager. James Farley is a good example of that. He was FDR's Postmaster General, and he was also head of the Democratic the senatorial committee. So he was handing out jobs at the same time he was delivering the mail. And that enabled, the Postmaster General to get a lot of things done and have his way a lot. Without the patronage system, the Postal Service got independence, but they don't have much power on Capitol Hill, and that's causing a lot of problems for them now.
And also, you write a lot about the technology of the Postal Service, which I think people maybe overlook, because they see trucks and men and women in them sticking things by hand into mailboxes. But there's a lot more to it than that.
Well, the Postal Service has always been at sort of the bleeding edge of of technology. Whether if you go way back, the stagecoach in the late 18th century, that was considered to be a great technological advance, and then steamboats and trains and things like that. But I think what you're referring to, and I think what a lot of people don't know, is that in the 50s, the Postal Service developed the optical character reader, which enabled them to sort of make mail sorting machines that could read addresses. Initially, that's what the zip code was created for. Machines could read these codes. They couldn't read handwriting yet, but that enabled basically the Postal Service to introduce sort of automation to the mail sorting system. Before that, it was everybody sorting letters by hand like they'd done back in Ben Franklin's time. But and from all around the world, people came to the U.S. Postal Service and they sort of marveled at that technology and they tried to adopt it. The tragedy is that it took decades for the Postal Service to actually institute that, you know, that technology in all its post offices, because, I mean, this is the world's largest mail carrier, and the whole program was underfunded, and it took forever. So even though the Americans developed it, Americans didn't really get the benefit of it for a long time.
We're speaking with Devin Leonard, author of a new book, Neither Rain Nor Snow, the first, I guess, in 50 years, history of the Postal Service. And they also tried some things that didn't work out so well, like picking up mailbags from airplanes with hooks dragging on the ground, which are kind of dangerous and so forth. What are some of the misfires that you saw in the history?
The irony, and I guess you can sort of debate, Tom, about whether or not this is a misfire, but they were certainly too early to the Internet. I mean, everybody thinks, the Postal Service blew it. The private sector developed email, and then by the time the public adopted it, the Postal Service was too late. But they actually had sort of a hybrid email system that they introduced in the early 80s called Ecom, and basically companies would send mail either electronically or on sort of big magnetic tapes to the Postal Service, and then the Postal Service would transmit it electronically around the country. Clerks would print out the letters and letter carriers would deliver them, but they ran into problems with the Postal Rate Commission, which wanted to, which introduced its own, or sort of forced the Postal Service to adopt sort of an alternative system, which was about twice as expensive. The tech industry sort of went nuts, and essentially the whole thing crashed and burned. But what that meant was that for another decade, the Postal Service was sort of gun shy of doing anything with electronic mail, and they tried again in the 90s, but at that point, email had really sort of come in, and it was kind of too late. A lot of resistance again, but the point is that these programs didn't work. But it's kind of amazing that the Postal Service saw electronic mail coming. They tried to do something. They were too early, but they didn't ignore it. They didn't sleep on it.
And also, they have a big numismatic end of things, the whole stamp end of the business, and that's been quite an area of development and ferment too. Correct?
Yeah. The fascinating thing is that there were no stamps until the 1840s. Basically, the English, adopted them first. For the longest time, people just went to the post office. They gave the clerk their letter. The Postal Service sent it to another post office, and then say, if I was sending one to you, Tom, you'd come and you'd pay for it. And sometimes you'd look at the letter, you'd say, "Oh, I don't want Devin's letter," so you wouldn't pick it up, and so. That's why the Postal Service had a big, dead letter operation. But it wasn't until the 1840s when finally the post office said, "Hey, forget about that. Let's use stamps. Let's make Devin pay for it. So it's not going to be on Tom. Tom won't be able to give the letter back to us and sort of reject it. So we'll get paid up front."
So if someone offers you an 1829 stamp, don't buy it.
No, don't take it. That's definitely a fake.
All right. And so just to wrap this up, what did you find the most compelling about this wonderful network that we have called the Postal Service?
Well, I just think it's amazing that the Postal Service is everywhere. Its trucks are everywhere. There's not as many mailboxes as there used to be, but there sure are a ton of them. And once you, there's a post office, in every downtown. Once you're sort of aware of it, and once you start looking around, I mean, it's a big system that everybody ignores, and people don't think it's as important as it used to be. But it's still enormous. It's still everywhere, and we all want our Amazon packages, and the Postal Service is delivering those. And it's delivering them on Sundays now. Just the more you get into it, the more you see it, the more fascinating it becomes.
Devin Leonard is author of the new book, Neither Rain Nor Snow, A New History of the U.S. Postal Service. Thanks so much for joining me.
No, thanks for having me.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.